The challenges I had, not just early in my career, but throughout my career, is how to handle the relationship with faculty. And I figured out fairly early on, you have to be very humble. Just be humble. Ask questions that you think might be stupid. They're teachers. They want to teach you, I mean, mostly. And that's something that stayed with me throughout my career and even now running an office.
Mary Albertson became director of the Office of Technology Licensing, or OTL, at Georgia Tech in July this year, having previously worked for University of Utah's Pivot Center and having spent the majority of her career working at Stanford for nearly 27 years. She's been a president of Autumn and received its President's Award in 2015 for her long-standing service. She tells us what brought her to Georgia Tech, what the Institute could learn from Utah and Stanford, and vice versa, and how she's tackling an incredibly long to-do list that includes dramatically expanding the OTL's capacity. She reflects on the challenges she's overcome in her career to date, and ponders how students can become a valuable asset to technology transfer offices. My name is Thierry Helas, and you are listening to Talking Tech Transfer. Mary, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
To start with, hopefully an easy one, can you give me an overview of OTL, perhaps with some headline numbers if you have them?
Yes. We have been receiving around 240 disclosures. That's down from what it was before the pandemic. We filed about 149 utilities and 80 patents issued. This is all fiscal year 21. 69 technologies were licensed. 9 of the licenses were to startups. And the total active number of startups is 103.
Wow. Can you tell me a little bit more about the other parts of the ecosystem that you have at Georgia Tech, because obviously OTL is not a standalone unit.
Right. And I'm actually finding out since I've been here, there is much more than I would have anticipated in the ecosystem. We have aspects like Venture Labs, which manages helping our startups. And that was an obvious one to me. We have a program called CreateX, which actually works with undergrads and helps teach them how to do startups, and they actually form companies. There are several accelerators that we feel like we should make sure we're in touch with to get any technology out of there that would be useful to commercialize. There are actually several commercialization shops in different colleges where they have their own little group to promote having their faculty and students make disclosures and get into the commercialization process however they can. It's basically very important for us to coordinate with all of those groups because they have services that can help us. We have services that can help them, but also from an education standpoint, we know some things they may not be as familiar with. So I've been spending a lot of time since I started meeting with all of these people in trying to figure out who they even are. And the first question I ask all of them is, what can we do to help you? Because I'm convinced that we have resources that will help all of these different organizations.
Yeah. Is there a certain point where your work starts and stops, or is it more of a spectrum?
It's definitely a spectrum, in particular the education phase, because the inventors need to be educated at many different stages. They may understand they need to disclose an invention. Even getting them to that point, you need to talk about what your resources are. And if they are already involved in one of these groups that I mentioned, they still may not understand when they're supposed to disclose. So getting the education out there, educating the people who are running these groups, they know a piece of what they do. They probably don't know all of what we do. And then all along the way, educating both the groups and the inventors.
Georgia Tech is currently implementing its Research Next plan. As part of that, OTL is expanding its capacity by 80%. Can you tell me a little bit more about this process and what it will mean for the office?
Well, anybody who has to increase an office by that much knows it's a challenge in many different ways. I have an excellent team right now, truly excellent. And we want to hire people who fit in well with that team, both culturally, but also skill level, performance level. And it's a challenge to hire right now. Many, many offices have openings for licensing associates. So basically pick where you want to live and there's probably a job there. Currently, I have 7 openings, which is nuts. I just hired 2 licensing associates, have to hire 2 more, and then all of these other positions. But what that means is that our office has great support from the VP of commercialization and the VPR, or they wouldn't have given us the budget to hire all those people. So they know it's important for this plan, and I have the challenge now to implement it.
And what a challenge you got when you joined as well. It's not a small task. Is it generally easy to attract people to Atlanta? Are they quite willing to move if they're not already there?
Well, we've had problems even getting people to apply, frankly. And both here and when I was at Utah, part of one of the biggest things that incentivized people was they already had family there or something like that. But I mean, Atlanta is a great place to live and it's got a lot of things that are attractive. So we just need to get people to apply and be able to speak with them. And then I'm convinced they'll be willing. I mean, Georgia Tech has world-renowned scientists. So the raw material, the inventions we get, excellent. Atlanta is a great place to live. I think it's just getting the people to apply.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's the difficult part. This is a big question, but what is your vision for the OTL?
It is to help change the culture on what commercialization means and, again, what the resources are. But there's a lot of things like MIT has a totally different culture. And I'm not saying we can be MIT, but trying to impress upon people that that is a very valued aspect, that they participate in entrepreneurship and commercialization. It's a cultural change. And a lot of that is going to be promoted by outreach, frankly, and telling success stories and about the university thinking it's an important component. And the university does. I mean, one of the big goals is to have Georgia Tech known as one of the best schools for entrepreneurship and commercialization. So it's definitely important.
Yeah, yeah. One interesting way in which Georgia Tech is tapping into a student population specifically for commercialization is the startup hackathon, where IP is made available to students to see if they can come up with a business plan. Do you think generally students will become an asset increasingly for OTL and perhaps specifically, but more broadly, tech transfer in general?
Absolutely. And one of the other programs besides the hackathon is CreateX, which I mentioned earlier, and the whole program is for taking undergrads and helping them learn how to start companies. So that's something where we can get input from those students as a resource. I'm hoping to take some of them and have them come and be interns because they know a lot about the process, certainly the startup process, but also just where that fits into commercialization. But in general, very much so. And I think one of the ways that we intend to do that is, like many offices, have internships and use their enthusiasm and their knowledge to help us with the process.
That would have been my next question. Do you run any internship programs? And are those internships then for them to learn about startups, or are they internships to learn more about the tech transfer side, licensing deals and those kinds of things?
So internships in our office, we don't have a program right now. It's on my to-do list, which I have a long one, but I've actually started gathering information from several sources on how they set them up and what kinds of checklists they use or forms they use to fill out and how they get someone to train the interns, because that's one thing I'm concerned about, which is, you know, how much manpower does it take to run this program? Definitely going to get into that. But in our office, they would learn more about the evaluation and the marketing of the technologies. If they wanted to learn more about startups, I think they would go to one of these other groups. I don't know if Venture Labs has an internship program, but they're the ones who are more immersed in actually starting, helping the company start.
Yeah. Perhaps linking all of this back to the entrepreneurial culture at Georgia Tech as well, do you generally find that the students at Georgia Tech are quite willing or interested in launching their own companies, whether it is based on IP or not?
Yes. And I don't know how it compares to other universities, because that's not something I've heard talked about a lot, which is where the students come into this. But definitely both. I mean, we definitely have grad students who will go out and found companies or be co-founders or very involved with startups that came out of the research they and their PI did. And then again, the CreateX program is just students, and they have a lot of applicants for that. That's, again, one of the things we're really trying to get out there and do with this outreach is I want to hit the grad students. I mean, they have great ideas. They're involved in some wonderful research, and people that age are very enthusiastic in general.
Yeah. Have the ambition of running your own company and probably still young enough and energetic enough to actually do it.
Exactly.
Do you track any numbers regarding engagement from women and underrepresented minorities?
Actually, unfortunately, we don't. And that is something that when I was at Stanford, we started doing, and even went back retrospectively and tried to fill out the data because it's important. But right now, Georgia Tech does not track that.
Okay. Do you plan on maybe running any programs aimed at those groups?
Yes. And I have talked to, again, other universities. Plus, Autumn has a very active group in promoting equity and inclusion. So we definitely are going to set up some training to specifically help female faculty members and grad students feel more inclined to disclose inventions and help them along the way with founding companies. So we do have a definite intent to do that.
Okay, that is good to hear. Perhaps on that note, what are the opportunities in Georgia Tech's ecosystem as it stands today?
Well, in all of those different groups I've talked about, there's a lot of opportunity in Georgia Tech itself to come in at whatever level you want, just disclosing, starting a company, getting involved in an accelerator. In Atlanta in general, we have some big companies that are good licensing opportunities, but we also have a startup community. And if you look at, you know, what that means, you know, do people stay in Atlanta or not? And is there a reason why? There are definitely startups that stay in the area. We found that raising money isn't the problem. Having good management in the area is. There's a wealth of knowledge here, and we have lots of workers, but finding the management people is what's tough. And then once they raise money, the issue is, some of the companies can stay here. Some of them need to go. The VCs want them closer. And then some need to leave because they want to create a synergy with other companies that feed into their business. They want to be closer to them. So there are reasons why they don't stay, but some of them do.
Is that something that has been improving over the years? Are more companies staying now than used to maybe 5 or 10 years ago?
I don't know the trend on that, but since there are more companies, the absolute number is there are more that have stayed. But percentage-wise, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's fair. Is there enough real estate for startups? Is Atlanta big enough, or does it have infrastructure like wet labs and so on?
There's enough real estate is specifically built out. They could use more. But right now, it's not the rate-limiting step.
Yeah, the management is, from the sounds of it.
Right, exactly.
I suppose it always comes back to the people, the same with your office. Finding the people is always the tricky part.
Right, exactly.
Is there a thriving industry in Atlanta that's looking for licenses, or do more of your licenses go maybe across the US or even internationally?
Well, right now, more of our licenses are going across the US. We try and give preference if they're in Atlanta, but we don't, when we're licensing, we don't discriminate. You know, we don't say, no, I won't go until I get an Atlanta company.
That would limit you quite a lot, I imagine, if you only you insisted on Atlanta company.
Yes.
I'm not actually sure what is Atlanta known for. What is the local industry? Is there a big pharmaceutical or?
Well, because it's Georgia Tech is here and is one of the big presence, there are more engineering type companies, and then there are some very large companies. But we have found that on the bio side, it's starting to grow. I would say it's not big yet.
Yeah. Is that the same you find with your own startups then? Are they more leaning on engineering, or do you have healthcare or whatever other sectors it might be?
More engineering.
I feel like I should have looked that up before I spoke to you, but it just dawned on me that I didn't actually know that much about Atlanta as a city. So that's quite interesting to hear.
Well, for example, I mean, two of the bigger startups, one of the companies is Pindrop, and they're still in Atlanta. And they're an information security company. They do this thing called acoustic fingerprinting. And it's meant to be as security as far as phones are concerned. And then another company, Celanano, went to California. They're a battery company. But what's interesting is one of the Georgia Tech faculty members, who's a CTO of this company, just received this designation they just created in this last year called the Regent's Entrepreneur Faculty. So he's a Regent Entrepreneur. So it's one of those recognitions that being entrepreneurial is a positive at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. You've already mentioned that you joined Georgia Tech from Utah. You spent some 26 years at Stanford. So you're slowly moving eastwards throughout your career.
Yep.
You're also a past president of Autumn, as I'm sure many people will know, and you received a president's award in 2015. How did you get started in this? What first drew you in?
I would say it was an accident. Back when I started, tech transfer wasn't a career at all. I had been working at a biotech company in the business development. We acquired a company, and as part of that, the business development person at that company needed to help us with a project we were doing. Well, it turns out she was working with Kathy Koo at Stanford and said, please apply for this job. And I thought I would go there and work there 2 years, get a job at a startup. That was it, and stayed 26 years. So it was an accident, but now it's a career. They have master's programs, and Autumn is huge now.
Yeah. Yeah. Even just going to the conferences themselves, it's almost intimidating how many people are in the room at any given time. It is phenomenal. What made you leave Stanford then? Was it just time for a new challenge after all that time?
Yes. It was probably, I mean, I was challenged the whole time I was there, which is why I stayed. And I liked working with Kathy Koo. She was great, somebody I could always learn from. My job actually changed every few years because she would give me something totally new to do. But yes, it was time for me to try something different. So the opportunity came up at University of Utah, and it seemed like a great one. So I went there.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are some of the changes that you've seen in the industry over these past almost three decades?
First of all, that it's a career now, but also that the tech transfer offices now have most of them have a much broader scope. They bring in the startup function. They have more focus on economic development issues beyond licensing. And some of them have things like the Office of Sponsored Projects within their office. So it's not what I call traditional tech transfer. It's not just getting a disclosure and trying to get a license. It's a much bigger picture. So that's something that's very different. The other thing is people are thinking, even if you keep the scope as traditional tech transfer, people are thinking much more creatively about how to be successful at that and trying to do different things. I mean, that's one of the things why I think Autumn is so important, because they not only share best practices, but they also share new ideas, and there's a lot of conversation and people come up with new ideas there. So that's what's been interesting to me.
Is there something that Georgia Tech could learn from Stanford or Utah, or the other way around?
I think one of the things that is interesting is I think all three of them could understand nobody has a crystal ball. And so coming from Stanford, I've given talks all over the world. I've given talks to countries that are just starting tech transfer offices, and they all say, how can we be like Stanford? And my response is, we have the same challenges you do. The reason why we're successful has to do with how long we've been in existence and the ecosystem. So try to be successful with the resources you have instead of trying to recreate Stanford or Silicon Valley. Some of the things I think that Georgia Tech can learn from my experience at University of Utah, they have some very interesting ways of doing things. Some of it is in the specific tech transfer office, but some of it is more in the startup side of things, because there both offices work together and have the same director. And those are things that I am going to communicate to the director of Venture Labs, our startup group. So there are quite a few and different emphases on what you need to do as far as communicating with the inventors. That's certainly something we can learn from the University of Utah.
Yeah, I remember I was lucky enough to have Keith Varmer from Utah on the podcast a few months ago now. And I mean, that man thinks big picture more than most people I've come across. It's kind of amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely, he does.
What is a noteworthy challenge that you have overcome that others could learn from?
I think one of the challenges I had, not just early in my career, but throughout my career, is how to handle the relationship with faculty. And I figured out fairly early on, you have to be very humble. Just be humble. Ask questions that you think might be stupid. They're teachers. They want to teach you, I mean, mostly. And that's something that stayed with me throughout my career, and even now running an office, is the challenge was feeling secure in myself and the way I did my job. The solution was be humble, and you have to be willing to learn. You handle a very broad range of technology. You can't just stick in one area, and you handle a large range of personalities. So you just have to pick that up. And the other challenge is there's way too much to know. You just have to not feel too insecure or worried about it. And managing the caseloads, I used to think when I was at Stanford, I've got the cure for cancer sitting on my desk and I haven't gotten to it yet. You know, it's just managing all those different potential stressors.
That's quite interesting. I don't know if I've ever had anyone touch upon that, that you might have an invention sitting on your desk that quite possibly will save lives and you can't let it get to you, that you're so many other disclosures that you have to get through first. Yep. Before you can get to it, because there might be others in there that are going to save lives. And
absolutely.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. Is there any specific advice that you would share with someone who's considering this career?
I think my biggest practical advice would be try and get an internship somewhere, because to me, that's a very highly rated characteristic for me. If somebody has gone to the effort to get an internship, if they were sought it out, if they were picked for it, if they spent the time learning what tech transfer is, I would give that advice. If somebody is looking to maybe advance their career, they're very early on. I can't say enough about Autumn. I mean, they have instructional courses. instructional workshops at the annual meeting, but you get to network. And when you network there, my biggest recommendation is you take business cards, but actually contact those people after the meeting. Because if you don't, you're never going to contact them. And just contact them and say, it was nice to meet you and whatever. And then the next time you're dealing with a licensing agreement and you don't know what terms to ask, you can just contact them. We're not competing with each other. It's a very collegial group.
Yeah, I think that is good advice. That reminds me, I know Ian McClure, the current Autumn Chair, was at the Praxis Oral Conference where he talked about when he got started in tech transfer and he basically looked for a mentor that had kind of the same life experiences as him and found Aaron Herskowitz, and they networked and now they're pretty good friends and they help each other out. And yeah, I think that's really good advice. Find someone who can help guide you and be a mentor.
And anybody would be really lucky to get Aaron as a mentor. He is phenomenal.
Yes. Sadly, I have still not met him in person. We've spent a lot of time on Zoom and via emails, but I've still not actually managed to meet him in person. I saw him at the autumn meeting a few years ago, but there was a room of 4,000 people, so I can't really call that a meeting.
Exactly. That is a problem with the annual meeting.
It is, yes. This is, perhaps you are in a good position considering you just started at the OTL, but if you had a magic wand, is there something that you would change about tech transfer?
Well, this will probably crack some people up, but yeah, more staff. I mean, the offices, the magic wand I would wave is that you had enough people that you could do justice to these inventions, because you might have the cure for cancer on your desk. And I don't know of maybe small offices, but I don't know of any medium to large offices where they have a manageable caseload. And so I would also say upper administration needs to believe in the value of tech transfer and not just look at the bottom line. Look at the impact this technology could make, and that the whole point is getting something off the benchtop and into the hands of someone who can use it. That's why I've been doing this for 28 years. Instead of going to industry, I believe in the mission of the university.
Yeah. Is that something that's innate? Is that something that you just have to have, or is that something that you can teach people?
I think you can teach people, in the sense that when I came to Stanford, that isn't what I thought I would do. I didn't think the mission of the university was something that I would buy into so much. But I really believed that it didn't need to be the bottom line. And it really grabbed me about the concept of taking something off the benchtop, which would go nowhere, would be published on, taking something off the benchtop and getting it developed and getting it for someone to use. And not just in the life sciences. Those are the obvious examples, but there are physical science examples too.
Perhaps more with life sciences in people's minds now, obviously, with the various COVID vaccines. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it can be anything. Gatorade out of Florida. I mean, it's a drink that most people probably wouldn't have thought about it being a university innovation, but
right.
It was, yeah. Can you give me some examples of Georgia Tech startups?
Well, I mentioned two of them, Pindrop and Silanano. Those are two of the more successful startups, and one of those stayed in Atlanta and one of those left. And those are both physical science companies.
Yeah, and especially with batteries, I imagine it's going to be a huge, huge market potential.
It's a big market, a lot of competition, but they wouldn't go down the road if they didn't believe it, right?
Yeah, true, true. That is pretty much all the questions I had. Was there anything else that you want people to know about Georgia Tech, other than perhaps apply for jobs?
Please apply for jobs. I have all kinds of jobs open. I guess it's not really necessarily for people to know about how you do tech transfer, but I really do want to thank all the tech transfer people out there who share their advice, share their wisdom, share their crazy ideas. We're not competitors. It's a very collegial atmosphere, but we wouldn't be able to do what we do if we didn't share all of that.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Very good closing words. Mary, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you.
Talking Tech Transfer is hosted by me, Thierry Helas. If this is your first time listening, make sure to hit that subscribe button and peruse our archive of more than 50 interviews. This podcast is a production by Global University Venturing, a Morsonia Limited publication. You can find our website at globalventuring.com/university, on Twitter at GUVenturing, and on LinkedIn as Global University Venturing. Our sound engineer is Mark Chatterley from In Ear Production. You can find out more about them at inearproduction.com. If you have any comments or are interested in being a guest on a future episode, feel free to email me at thehales@globalventuring.com. That's thehales@globalventuring.com. We'd also really love it if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts, and if you haven't yet, do recommend this podcast to your friends and colleagues, or maybe even share it on LinkedIn or Twitter. Until next time, goodbye.